Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. I am Mark Hamilton. Joining me, as always, is my friend, colleague, co-worker, partner in crime, Mr. Mark Daly. We have a ton of stuff to get to today. The Formula One community is still in a total uproar, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes. But before we get there, let's get through our typical preamble. My friend, how are you?
Well, good. I mean, anything that we can do to maybe avoid talking about what we need to talk about is probably the way to go this evening because, man, it's been almost a week and people are angry. And I totally get it, by the way, but wow. Just what a crazy, crazy, crazy week to follow up was a crazy, crazy, crazy race, right? But we'll talk about that in a minute. I'm excited for a different reason for once because we're in the off season, which is something I always kind of dreaded because I was like, how do I fill and create content for the next 2 months? But we got a lot of things covered, so I'm not worried about that. But what I am excited about is that it's tomorrow is going to be Friday, December 17th. It's my last day of work for a couple of weeks. I'm taking some time off, really looking forward to that. And I was really upfront with the people in the office today, and they said, well, what are you going to do when you come into work tomorrow? I'm just like, you know what? I got everything done that I needed to do to get out the door this week. So that's all taken care of. And they said, okay, well, what's on the schedule tomorrow? I said, well, to be quite honest, I'm just going to come in and I'm just going to surf the net all day and just socialize. I said, basically what I do every time I'm in the office, but I'm just being upfront and honest about it this time. So,
anyone that knows you, by the way, knows that's pure nonsense. You are the hardest working guy in your industry. Oh, gosh.
I know, but it's funny. I'm feeling it already. I'm feeling the holiday vibes and, I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood despite everything that's gone on in F1. Over the past week or so, but yeah, and you're looking good yourself. You're looking rested, even though I know that your house, because you're recording at a different place than usual, and I know that your little DIY project, your reno in the office downstairs, isn't quite going to schedule. Let's just put it that way.
No, it's not. I had wild ambitions about what I was going to create because I watch a lot of these. I watch a lot of these hip hop documentaries, and I see these wild studios, and I'm like, you know, I can build something like that—a little wallpaper, a big TV on the wall, a new floor, some studio speakers—and within a week, I'm wildly over budget and nothing has come in and I don't know who's going to mount. I don't know who's going to put the wallpaper on the wall. It's a total disaster. So half the basement is in our living room right now blocking the Christmas tree and I'm recording this sitting on the floor in my living room. So thank goodness I have a new laptop.
Hopefully Exhibit is listening to this and he can come and pimp your basement. So,
We'll see.
We'll see what happens. We might have to call in the pros. Whoever that is, we might have to call someone to rescue you.
Anyone got the phone number for Geek Squad? No, that's a plug. Mark, you cannot plug that. Stop. What was I going to say? I had another point. Oh, yeah. So part of the plan was that this week I'm off. So I'm off this week, and then I work the next 2 weeks. So I'll be working over Christmas. And then
Boo.
I get the first week of January off, and I'm cool with that.
That's cool.
But I'll be getting the first week of January off. But one of the things I'd planned to do this week was I wanted to get the office done and I wanted to start working on our YouTube channel. So I wanted to help us take our visuals to the next level because I think there's a ton of growth opportunity within the YouTube platform. But one of the things that I'd failed to recognize was that as my wife and my son landed back in the country last week, because he's under five, they don't test them. And because he's under five, he's not vaccinated. vaccinated. So he's under a mandatory 14-day quarantine before he can go back to daycare.
Oh, man.
So he's been with me every, and my wife's working. So he's been with me every minute of the day. And I love him to pieces. He's not violent. He's not destructive, but he is so high energy.
I love how that's the first two words to describe your son are like, he's not violent and he's not destructive. Okay.
Maybe boys typically are.
Yes,
it's just
typically,
like every 30 seconds, like, Baba, 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 Baba. And he speaks fluent Farsi and I don't. So typically I'm trying to translate what he's telling me and then he gets frustrated because I don't understand what he's saying. Oh, it's been a blast. Like I've had some really quality time with him this week, but I haven't been as productive, but I think that's okay because I'm spending a little bit of time with family.
Yeah, totally. You get a bit major pass, you know, spending time with your son like that.
That said, I think we've got to cut the preamble short, man.
As
you and I want to avoid the topic, and I've really been avoiding it all week because obviously we recap the outcome of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix during our Sunday show, which dropped Monday. I think that podcast was very well received, at least in the way that we positioned our interpretation of what had happened. I was hoping, and I think this was a lost cause, but I was hoping that there would have been some relief or some sort of resolution as the course of the week went over. And I kind of distanced myself from the world of Formula One over the last couple of days. And I certainly tried to stay away from Formula One Twitter and Formula One social media, but we had a Spaces chat tonight and it was really great. And there was some really great conversation, but what was immediately clear to me, and it has been based on the conversations and the tweets and the DMs that we've had this week, is that people are overwhelmingly still extraordinarily angry, and rightfully so, are extraordinarily angry. And I'm one of those people increasingly as my position continues to evolve and develop, but people are incredibly angry. And I said this on the Spaces chat tonight, that this is an incredibly important inflection point, not only for the FIA, but also for Formula One, because like no time in the history of this sport, they have an almost captive, immeasurably large audience.
Yeah.
And what we saw Sunday was, short of a crash and an injury to a driver, was possibly the worst possible outcome. And I'm certainly not talking about Max, because I might sound a little bit hypocritical, but I strongly believe he deserves to have won the championship. He's a fantastic driver. They played the strategy perfectly, and based on the cards that were dealt, they did everything right and they won a championship. Congratulations, Max. Congratulations, Red Bull. You deserve your flowers. But I think this is an inflection point, because ultimately all of us left that race, left that moment, left that day frustrated, confused, unclear of what had happened. And this has to be an inflection point for the FIA, and it needs to be an inflection point for Formula One. And they have to understand that all of the things that we've seen over the last few weeks and months are totally avoidable. There's some really obvious low-hanging fruit here. And I'm frustrated. Our listeners are frustrated. The community's frustrated. And you have to be careful as well, because admittedly, I have a little bit of bias and I have a horse in this race. And I was hoping to see Lewis win. And I said all year, ultimately, I would be happy with whoever won as long as it went down to the wire. It was a close, clean championship. Unfortunately, it did go down to the last lap of the last race.
Yeah.
But as so many people have indicated, it felt, or the perception is, that it was manipulated or it was a manufactured outcome. And I don't believe for a second that the outcome in terms of the winner was predestined. It was pre-designed that anyone at the FIA or that anyone at Formula One specifically manipulated the outcome of the championship to see Max win. I don't believe that for a second. But what I think is lacking here, and kudos to Meg because she used a really good term during our Spaces chat tonight, is that we need a tremendous amount of transparency in this moment and permanently going forward, because unfortunately, the lack of insight and the lack of intel and the lack of clarity that's being provided by Formula One and the FIA about what had happened is only helping to fuel all of these conspiracy theories that are emerging. And the conspiracy theories are that, hey, look, the FIA, Formula One, they did wanted a different winner, that this is the narrative that Netflix wanted, all these other kind of pieces. And mm-hmm. I was listening to a really good interview today with David Croft, Crofty, with Sky News. And one of the points that he had made that I wasn't immediately aware of is that the Formula One, the FIA, could quash almost all of this conspiracy theory talk today because there were cameras on Michael Massey that entire time, that if the FIA and Formula One wanted to get out in front of this and provide some relief and some resolution and some clarity of the situation, release the tape. Let us understand what the decision-making process was. Help us understand how we get from a moment where, hey, we're not going to lap the cars to we're going to partially unlap the field. Like, how did we get to that point? And if it was simply an honest misjudgment, if it was simply an in-the-moment decision that Michael Massey made and it wasn't the right one, so be it. We can all live with that. Mm-hmm. But I think the fear is that there was intervention here, that between that radio call that we're not going to lap the cars to that last second, last ditch moment where, hey, we are going to unlap some of the cars, it feels like there was intervention from somewhere. Maybe it was from the commercial interests. I don't know. But I feel like we as fans deserve some closure and some clarity as to what happened. Because if you release those tapes and we simply discover that, look, Michael Massey was under a immeasurable amount of pressure that none of us could ever feel. He was getting called from the team principals. He understands the moment. He understands the spotlight. And this was simply his decision in the moment. All right, it was a human decision. It wasn't ideal. Let's review. Let's restructure. Let's regroup. Let's look at how we can avoid this happening again. But if there was some sort of commercial involvement or some sort of commercial intervention, then that's something else entirely, and that could possibly be much more damaging for the sport. And the last comment that I'll have, and I honestly didn't mean to start this podcast with a bit of a rant, but the last concept kind of comment that I'll have is, you know, over the course of the last 72 to 96 hours, Jean Todt has been absolutely AWOL. Like, Jean Todt, if you are the president of the FIA and your race director and the stewards and your entire organization is under fire in ways that it's never been under fire before, where are you? How is the FIA not called an emergency press conference, sat down with every single credentialed and non-credentialed journalist that they can fit into a conference room and walk us through step by step how we got from lap 53 to lap 58. Take us through with a time code. Show us every step. Help us understand the decision-making. Step up and back your guys. Like, to me, the silence is deafening. And I know Jean Todt has a foot out the door because reportedly he's on his way back to Ferrari. But this is terrible. And I honestly feel, and I know there's a lot of slander and hatred for Michael Massey, which I don't believe is earned. I certainly don't believe it's deserved. I certainly don't believe it's appropriate. But you know what? Step up for your guy. And you know what? If you don't necessarily agree, you know what? Let's admit that. Like, hey, look, you know what? He was under an immense amount of pressure. We're going to do some things to mitigate this from happening again. And here's what's going to happen. Something, anything. It's just if, and you know, Meg said this in the chat as well tonight, F1 is facing a PR crisis that it hasn't experienced in decades. Anyways, my rant is over. I'm sorry. I did not mean to kick the podcast off with that, but no, I just wanted to get that out before we get into our few topics.
I mean, before we even get to the news stories, I mean, I think it was summed up at best. I think it was Sunday night. I think it was on the BBC website, the BBC Sport. And forgive me if I mangle this a little bit, but I think the headline, the lead was something referring to Max, was something deserving champion. But with a questionable or one in a questionable way or something like that. And I think that was the best way to say
it.
I mangled that a little bit. I apologize. And well, first of all, before I talk, address some of the things that you say, the one thing that I think I saw this week that actually took away the anger and the frustration and actually made me really sad was seeing Nick Latifi apologize for going into the wall and creating this whole situation. I'm like, bro, you got nothing to apologize for.
Agreed.
100%. You had a moment. This is racing. Accidents happen. Nothing like that. You should not have to apologize or feel like you even have to say anything about it. You are like I don't think anybody should be pointing a finger at you one way or another. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, when it comes to this whole mess with this whole restart and thing like that, and things like that, I mean, I know that we've talked about this, you know, almost ad nauseum, but I can't help but thinking that, much like yourself, I don't think that there was any underhandedness. I think that it is, and I mean, I'm not going to be an apologist for Michael Massey. He made the decision that he made. He's got to own that, and he has to stand by it. It is what it is now, right? And I was thinking about, did they try to get like the storybook ending? Did they want the Hollywood finish? Which they got. I mean, but it's probably more they got Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Friday the 13th rather than maybe, I don't know, what's a happy movie? Something with a happy ending. Maybe Frozen? I don't know. Gone with
Zootopia.
The Wind? There we go. Clifford. Zootopia. Clifford. Something that's got a happy, funny, bubbly ending. So they got Friday the 13th. That's what they got. But I mean, I struggle to think that there was intervention, like you say. I think that Michael was aware of the context. And like I said, once Nikki went into the wall and the situation happened, somebody was going to come out on the short end of the stick. And I think that we walked through all the different scenarios. I think that if that race ended behind a yellow flag or a red flag just because they ran out of laps, sure, it would have been very anticlimactic, but I mean, Lewis was what, 12, 13, 14 seconds ahead of Max at that point. But I think what he was probably had in the back of his mind was the fact that Red Bull probably would have bitched and whined for the next 42 years that if they didn't get those lap cars out of the way, that Max was not able to, you know, challenge Lewis for the, you know, that last couple of laps of racing. Perhaps he did just wanted to remove those cars and at least give the impression that they tried to remove any obstacles, maybe thinking there's not enough time. Maybe, well, I mean, they had to always, you know, expect that Max was going to make a move because he went in for tires and Lewis didn't. But I think they tried to remove any hint of maybe favoring one driver one way or the other in the way that they did it. They didn't have a lot of time. I think it was clumsy. And ultimately, the way that it worked out was the worst case scenario, because the guy that you know, was the quickest, had the best car, was the best driver on the day, didn't end up winning that race, which maybe if it's any other race out of the calendar, maybe it's, you know, yeah, maybe you're angry and upset about it. But this one, there was a title on the line, and that's why people are so angry about it. I think they wanted the storybook ending. They didn't want to see it end behind the safety car. They didn't want to see it ended with a red flag. And perhaps it's a little bit greed, but you know, when you have a guy that's responsible for all these different things and these these different parties external to they're sitting up on the pit wall, have like the hotline to get up in his face, so to speak, and you know, lobby and complain and basically vocalize their frustrations or what things are going on in real time, it's that's not right either. I mean, I hate to see that in other sports. I mean, you do see it from time to time. And I mean, you know, that's the one nice thing, say in the NFL, right? There's a PI call, right? Flag goes on the field. And, you know, maybe it's a bad call when you see the replay. But I mean, the one thing that's different in football is some plays are challengeable. They go and review it. And, you know, and especially when it comes to scoring plays inside, was it the 2-minute warning? All these plays are automatically reviewed. And of course, when you're playing from scrimmage and, you know, each play only goes, you know, several seconds at most, you have the luxury of being able to do that. Whereas in Formula One, when the cars are going 200 miles an hour and even behind the safety car, things are happening in the blink of the eye. I, again, maybe I'm just too nice. Maybe, you know, I'm not willing to go down the conspiratorial roadway, pathway, whatever you want to call it. I just think they bungled it. They wanted the storybook ending. They wanted to remove any sort of like bias one way or the other. And they got the worst possible outcome in terms of the, you know, the way that it could have, you know, worked out. I mean, obviously Max deserved to win a championship, but he didn't necessarily deserve to win it under those circumstances. And, you know, I would think that even your most diehard Verstappen fan deep down, even if they don't want to admit it, are probably thinking that, yeah, Max got really lucky on this one. And perhaps this wasn't the one that he deserved to win right off. Well, he deserved to win it, but maybe this was not the way that he should have won it. I don't want to say he didn't deserve it, because he did. I mean, he had a phenomenal season and so did Lewis. I mean, maybe Martin Brundle has it right when he said they should share the championship. I mean, in an ideal world, but, you know, we don't live in that world, and one of them has to be the champion. So, you know, Lewis fans, Team LH, I can understand their anger. I totally understand why people are upset. I understand why Lewis is upset. I understand why Toto's upset. I get it. I totally get it.
To me, the best case scenario here is exactly what you described, which was Michael Massey and the FIA simply bungled the decision-making about how they should proceed with recalling the safety car. That, to me, is the best case, that it was human error. There was an avalanche of pressure. The outcome wasn't ideal. I think the question is, and I think what everyone wants to better understand is, why would Michael Massey have felt pressured to give us that storybook one lap ending to the race? That's not his job. That's not his role. His role is to officiate the race and to manage the safety of the sport. It's not his objective to create a one lap shootout at the end of the race. And I think the question continues to remain, where did that pressure come from, if it did? And that's why, for me, that David Croft interview earlier today was so, I don't want to say eye-opening, was so ear-opening, because he made such a great point about the fact that, look, you know what, Michael Massey is being taped throughout this entire journey. Like, the tapes are out there. You know what, if nobody did intervene and inject themselves into the decision-making process, simply release the tapes. Like, hey, you know what, again, let's have a press conference. Here's the tapes. Here's what's happened. This is what we were thinking. This is why the decisions were made. At least try to provide some clarity around the decision-making. But I think the fear that a lot of people have ultimately is that somebody did inject themselves into that decision-making, and Michael Massey was forced to make a decision that he wasn't comfortable making. And if that's the case, that's wholly inappropriate, because you're undermining the core function of the FIA, which is to officiate the sport and manage the safety of the sport. So again, I think the best case is, you're right, it was absolutely bungled. They didn't follow their own rule book, and this was the outcome. And it's going to be a stain on the legacy of the sport forever. There's going to be, unfortunately for Max, there will be an asterisk next to his title, and I'm sure that the Red Bull Max fans don't want to hear that, but that's going to be the reality. This is much, much worse than Belgium. This is much worse than the 2005 US Grand Prix. This is worse than anything in the last quarter century, short of, obviously, any time a driver is injured, that is paramount, and that supersedes everything. But in terms of avoidable, bureaucratic, administrative, low-hanging fruit, this is the worst. So for me, if somebody injected themselves into that conversation, that's wholly inappropriate, and it undermines the competitive spirit of the entire sport. Now, what I don't believe is that there's been some grand conspiracy that's been running since the beginning of the championship to keep it tight, but to find a way to get Max that chip at the end of the season. I don't believe that's the case. I would love if somebody did some journalistic work and uncovered that that's not the case. Because if it is, the sport is doomed and they need to refund every ticket and every F1 TV Pro subscription sold this year. But I do sense that maybe somebody did inject themselves into that decision-making process. And I'm just hoping that the FIA and Formula One can ultimately prove me wrong, because then at least we can rest easy knowing, hey, it was a horrible outcome. They didn't follow their own rule book. It was a human error, and this is avoidable in the future. Just, it's unfortunate that it came down literally to the last lap of the last race in a championship deciding moment.
Yeah, I still think that maybe you apply Occam's razor to this one and just go with the simplest explanation that Massey wanted to remove any sort of perception of bias between, you know, Lewis and Max, and the fact that they wanted to restart that race and have a couple of laps under green. For whatever reason, he felt compelled to do so. Why is the $64,000 question, right? But regardless, he felt that that they needed to win, or they had to finish this race racing under green rather than behind the safety car or red flagged. And I think that just with the pressure of time and the fact that there were not very many laps to go, that it was a spur of the moment decision that was made, and he just decided to, you know, have those several lap cars unlap themselves and get out of the way. And it was just, it was bungled. I mean, you know, I mean, if something else is proven otherwise, like, you know, in the way that you've outlined it, sure, I'd love to hear it. But, you know, it was not the outcome that they really needed. I mean, again, I mean, it's just tough, right? And I mean, I was trying to be, you know, like I said, I mean, if I'm cheering for anyone these days, it's for Ferrari. So it was... You know, I didn't really have any skin in the game either way. But having said that, I didn't want to see it the way that it did. And that's, you know, so, I mean, I'm not happy either.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I think the reason why people are upset is, one, there's this sense of conspiracy simply because there's a lack of clarity and a total lack of transparency, which is that great word that Meg provided. But I think on top of it too, the FIA through Michael Massey didn't even follow their own rule book. And had they followed the rules as we all interpret them, then ultimately the race would have finished under a caution and Lewis Hamilton would be an 8-time world champion. So there's obviously a lot of people that are very frustrated. I think I'm one of them, because it was a long, exhausting championship with some incredibly exciting moments. It came down to the finale, which is all any of us can ever ask. But given some of the oddities and the anomalies and some of the friction that we've experienced this year, unfortunately, it just felt like it was a predetermined outcome that it was going to end oddly. And that's exactly what happened. And like I said, short of somebody being hurt, which is entirely an entirely different hemisphere of conversation, this is possibly the worst commercial outcome for Formula One, that 3-4 days later, nobody is talking about Max. Nobody is talking about Max. Everyone is simply talking about how the race ended. And look at us, man. We're 30 minutes into this podcast, and that's still all we're talking about.
I know. I mean, what else is there really, you know, to talk about at this point? They have, the FIA, that is, has launched an investigation into this controversy. There is a fairly lengthy press release that they put out there earlier this week on Wednesday, I believe it was. So, you know, there's a lot of takeaways in there, but I'll just read one or two paragraphs here. Quote, the circumstances surrounding the use of the safety car following the incident of driver Nicholas Latifi and the related communications between the FIA race direction team and the Formula One teams have notably generated significant misunderstanding and reaction from Formula One teams, drivers, and fans, an argument that is currently tarnishing the image of the championship and the due celebration of the first driver's world championship title won by Max Verstappen and the 8th consecutive Constructors' World Championship title won by Mercedes. Following the presentation of a report regarding the sequence of events that took place following the incident on lap 53 of the Grand Prix, and in a constant drive for improvement, the FIA president proposed to the World Motorsport Council that a detailed analysis and clarification exercise for the future with all relevant parties will now take place. This matter will be discussed and addressed with all the teams and drivers to draw any lessons from the situation and clarity to be provided to the participants, media, and fans about the current regulations to preserve... I was going to say pervert, that's my mispronunciation. So to preserve the competitive nature of our sport while ensuring the safety of the drivers and officials, end quote. So
Can I add something to this?
Yeah, go for it, jump in.
So when I was in high school, it was grade 9, it was a cold, wet, dark Pacific Northwest morning, and I and a fellow student were waiting at the bus stop for our school bus to come.
Okay.
And he and I were hit by a drunk driver standing on the side of the road waiting for our bus. We got run over by a drunk driver. So we went flying. Our stuff went flying. We ended up in the ditch. The guy was completely drunk. Somehow we managed to get on the school bus. And we, as soon as we got to the school, we're sore, we're hurting. We went to the office and reported the incident. This is back in 1995, 96. So maybe things have changed. But eventually later that day, the vice principal approaches me and he makes a statement that bothered me then and it bothers me now. He's like, I understand you were in an accident of your own making, inferring that we were the ones that were at fault, wow. Presumably because maybe we weren't standing exactly where we were supposed to stand. But this statement from the FIA takes zero responsibility for what had happened on Sunday. Like, you did a really great job of summarizing that, and you picked the perfect statement. And I quote again, have notably generated significant misunderstanding and reactions. So they're blaming misunderstanding and reactions from F1 teams, mm-hmm. drivers, and fans. So the FIA is saying that the misunderstanding and reactions are coming from the F1 teams, drivers, and fans. So, hey, you know what? The problem here is that you're misunderstanding what happened. Even though we, the FIA and Formula One, have done nothing to clarify, shame on you.
Yeah.
And furthermore, this misunderstanding of the reactions have created an argument that is currently tarnishing the image of the championship. So you're at fault because you're misunderstanding the rules. And furthermore, your misunderstanding is creating an argument that's currently tarnishing the image of the championship. So absolutely zero accountability here. This is a nothing statement. This is
Mark,
a PR blitz.
Just calm down here, my friend, because after they get done with their detailed and analysis and clarification exercise, all the untarnishing will be done and we'll all be happy and we'll all be high-fiving each other. So all the misunderstanding will be done after this clarification exercise. So maybe bottle up your rage. You know, I'm being sarcastic and facetious, but I mean, to say that that statement misses the mark is a bit of an understatement. Anyways, let's take a quick break here. We'll come
back.
And why don't we talk about, what we've already been talking about for the past 25, 30 minutes. So we'll talk about a little bit more. Anyways, we'll be back in just a moment. So don't go away. We will be back after a short word from our sponsors.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 3-1 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And yes, you are listening to Mark Hamilton, Mr. Mark Daly, talking about, that incident, that race, it still happens. It's the people are still raging. It's been almost a week and it's incredible. Anyways, the one thing that did come out earlier today on Thursday is that Mercedes has officially confirmed that they will no longer be pursuing their appeal of the finish to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. A team statement from Mercedes said, quote, "We left Abu Dhabi in disbelief of what we had just witnessed. Of course, it's part of the game to lose a race, but it's something different when you lose faith in racing. Together with Lewis, we have deliberated carefully how to respond to the events at the Formula One season finale. We've always been guided by our love for the sport, and we believe that every competition should be won on merit. In the race on Sunday, many felt, us included, that the way things unfolded was not right. The reason we protested the race on race result on Sunday was because the safety car regulations were applied in a new way that affected the race result after Lewis had been in a commanding lead and on course to win the world championship. We appealed with the interest of sporting fairness, and we have since been in a constructive dialogue with the FIA and Formula One to create clarity for the future so that all competitors know the rules under which they are racing and how they will be enforced. End quote. So there you go. Mercedes not really mincing any words. And also what is interesting here is apparently Lewis himself intervened and basically, you know, asked them to stop their appeal process. So interesting that that he did, but I guess, you know, what's really going to happen now at this point? I know they had that 96-hour period into which they could appeal or announce their intention to appeal, and then they could withdraw it, but what do you make of Lewis jumping in and saying, you know what, guys, maybe we should just let this one go?
Yeah, completely expected. I don't think that Lewis wants to be associated with a title that's perhaps won in the courts. I don't think that's how he wants to see this championship played out. And I think that could be even more problematic for his legacy than not having won it at all. I think that would be dangerous for the sport and the team. And as much as you and I and all of us can make the argument that he was, with five laps left, the world championship, and if not for the way that the rules were interpreted or misinterpreted towards the end of that Grand Prix, he would be an 8-time world champion. But I'll be very honest, if I was in his situation, and as we all know, that's never going to happen, I don't think that's the way that I would want to win a championship.
And yeah,
it was a report, I think today or yesterday, from the Daily Mail that indicated that he made it very clear to Toto Wolff and the rest of the Mercedes leadership team that he wanted the appeal to be dropped. And earlier today, in a Zoom call that Tim Haraney was a part of, and the clips of it are available online as well, Toto was very, very clear that he believed that they would be very successful if this did go to court. That said, of course, initially it's an FIA court, and it's a very unique situation because it would be the FIA ruling on the FIA. And then ultimately you need to move beyond the FIA courts, and then it's a whole different world of legal
kangaroo
complications
courts
and logistics. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it doesn't surprise me that Lewis, being of absolutely pure class, intervened to end the appeal. And I think we saw that on, Sunday, that he was very cognizant of what the outcome was, which is Max won the Grand Prix based on the circumstances that had presented themselves to the Red Bull team. And Lewis was absolutely 100% pure class. And I know he parked his car up in Parc Fermé, and he was clearly processing the moment and trying to understand what had happened, but he shook off whatever bitterness or unhappiness he had, and he was an absolute class act professional when he was on the podium and when he was being interviewed post-race. And I think based on that, I would have been very surprised if he had supported the appeal process, because it would have been in contradiction to the way that he had presented himself post-race. So certainly not surprised at all. But yeah, like I said, in that Zoom call earlier today, Toto was very clear that had they proceeded, he feels that they would have been successful. But I think it's very fortunate for Formula One, and I think it's very fortunate to the FIA that, at least from a Mercedes perspective, they're not pouring any more fuel on this controversy right now, that they've accepted the outcome. And that statement that you were reading continues as well. To Max Verstappen and Red Bull Racing, we would like to express our sincere respect for your achievements this season. You made this Formula One championship title fight truly epic. Max, we congratulate you and your entire team. We look forward to taking the fight to you on the track next season.
Yeah.
So I feel, at least from the Mercedes perspective, when you talk about this entire situation, I think they've accepted the outcome. And obviously there's been some sort of, and again, this is when we talk about transparency, I think we all are owed a little better than we're getting. But obviously there was a conversation with the FIA, which made Mercedes feel better about the situation. Although I'd like to better understand what that conversation the conversation was, but it doesn't mean that the situation's over. And I think the FIA Formula One were hoping that, hey, you know what, Mercedes is going to release this statement and drop the appeal and things are going to turn sunny. Well, that's certainly not what's happening at this point.
Well, you know that that something's really smells of rotten fish if that instead of this being dealt with properly, all of a sudden they delve into the secret vaults where they keep all the information from Area 51 and the JFK assassination and the Ferrari engine scandal.
And driver contracts.
Yeah, and driver contracts, and they throw out the results of that secret deal that they made with Ferrari a couple of years ago. And then, then you know that something stinks. Anyways, another thing that Toto said was, quote, "I am not interested in having a conversation with Michael Massey. The decisions that have been taken in the last 4 minutes of this race have dropped Lewis Hamilton from a deserved world championship. His driving, particularly in the last four races, was faultless. He had a commanding lead on Sunday in Abu Dhabi from the get-go. He won the start and never gave the lead away again. Robbing him in the last lap of the race is unacceptable. That is why, from a personal standpoint, from a professional standpoint, I cannot. My values and my sense of integrity just isn't compatible with the decisions that have been made on Sunday. So it is up to the FIA to decide going forward how these decisions, how these situations can be avoided," end quote. So that's an interesting one. So I guess just based on that, he won't be getting a Christmas card from Toto either. Now, this next statement from Toto, I find a bit puzzling, to be quite honest. He said that he hopes that disillusioned Lewis Hamilton doesn't walk away from Formula One and call it a career. So Toto basically said that that he and Lewis are disillusioned with Formula One at the moment, which, I mean, we can completely understand. But he goes on to say, quote, "I would very much hope that Lewis continues racing because he's the greatest driver of all times. He, when you look at it from the point of view of the last four races, he dominated them on Sunday. There wasn't even a doubt who won the race, and that was worthy of winning the championship. So we will be working through the events over the next weeks and months. And I think as a racer, his heart will say what I need to continue because he's at the peak of his game. But we will have to overcome the pain that was caused upon him on Sunday. Also because he is a man with clear values and it is difficult to understand that it happened," end quote. So this one, I think, is an interesting one. I couldn't see Lewis really being that angry to the point that he would walk away from Formula One for good. I mean, we know that he's got less years in front of him than he has behind him based at the age that he's at. But I mean, what we know for sure is he's still at the peak of his, he's at the pinnacle right now. I mean, he's in his prime, still driving as good as ever. But I thought it was kind of interesting that one little quotable snippet about Lewis walking away, I think is an interesting one. But I can't see Lewis walking away now.
No, I completely agree. I don't think that's the way that Lewis would want to wrap up his career. I think when Lewis goes, we'll all know it well in advance. I hope that we know when Lewis's last year is happening, because I think he deserves that ceremony at every single track over the course of his final season. And I think we see this in the NBA. We saw this with Dwayne Wade. We saw this with Derek Jeter, that, hey, when this athlete's going to a ballpark or an arena for the last time, there's a video ceremony and they're honored. I think that's what Lewis ultimately deserves, is that in his final season, he deserves those types of recognition and those signs of respect throughout the globe. But I agree, I don't think that's the way he wants to end his career. That said, I think we've all been in a situation, and certainly none of us can relate to what Toto and Lewis have been through over the course of the last 96 hours, but mm-hmm. I think we've all been in a situation before where we lost something that was very important to us, and we go into a pit of despair. And when you're in the basement of that pit of despair, everything mm-hmm. seems hopeless and it seems lost. But over time and with work, you start to climb out of that pit of despair. And I think right now, Toto and Lewis are absolutely emotionally just drained. They're exhausted. And I think they're in that pit of despair right now. And I think, though, over the course of the next few weeks, you get through Christmas, you get some breathing space between what had happened and the holidays. And I think at that point, Lewis and Toto will start turning their attention to the 2022 car. Their focus will change. Their drive will return. The hunger will come back.
Yeah.
But I think right now, neither of them are looking to leave the sport. Absolutely not Lewis. That's not the way he's going to end his tenure in the sport. He's a 7-times world championship. Maybe he never has a shot at another chip, but ultimately that's not the way he wants to go out. He wants to go out on his own terms, and he deserves that year of recognition and accolades and respect. And I think maybe it's not this year. He's got a 2-year deal. Maybe it's the year after. Who knows? We'll see how Mercedes looks on track. I think if he's hyper-competitive, he'll continue to go. But yeah, certainly I don't expect to see him leave the sport because of this, because of the situation.
Now, a couple of interesting snippets and quotes from Max Verstappen now for your consumption and for your thoughts and your analysis. First one, quote, "No, I mean, it's quite typical looking at the season that it happens. It is what it is. I mean, we were still happy and enjoying it. And we, as a team, didn't do anything wrong. We raced when there was a green light and a green flag, so we went for it and we did it on the track," end quote. So Max obviously talking about the situation, how it played out at the end of the race. That's fairly straightforward, but I'm going to read both and then I want to get your thoughts on both of them. Then the second one is just Max, talking about Lewis specifically and what happened afterwards. So he says, quote, "There was one side that was incredibly happy and one side that was disappointed. Of course, I felt for Lewis. He did everything right throughout the whole race. But, you know, F1 can be very unpredictable. And of course, it can go either way. It could have been the other way around as well, where I could be controlling the race and then I would lose it on the last lap. That's unfortunately also a part of racing," end quote. So your thoughts on those two little quotes? I mean, as usual, not more than a couple of sentences from Max, kind of short and to the point, but what do you make of those two comments?
It is what it is. That seems to be, and that's pretty not much my response. Yeah. I think that's one of Max's token
kind of his
phrases.
Go-to phrase, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, like I feel bad that they have to be on the defensive, and mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's important to understand the context with which these responses are coming, because we don't often get the question. We don't often get the context for the question. Maybe it's part of a bigger conversation. I feel a little bit bad that they have to be defensive on this, although typically I think that's the culture with the Milton Keynes squad at Red Bull. I don't think they did anything wrong in this race. I don't think they did anything wrong all weekend. Max did a great job of qualifying and he got a lovely slipstream from his teammate. And then during the race, he didn't have a great start. Sergio was epic at fighting with Lewis to mm-hmm. give Max the opportunity to get back in the race. And there was a safety car, unfortunately, but safety cars happen because there was a crash, and crashes happen when two Formula One cars are racing, regardless of where they are in the field. And Red Bull correctly and smartly brought Max in for softs. And I also don't fault Mercedes for not doing it, because to be honest,
well, regardless,
I don't even know where the Mercedes car was at the time.
Whatever happens, like the safety car and the whole bungled restart notwithstanding, those two teams were going to do the opposite of what the other one did. If Lewis went in for fresh tires, Max would have stayed out. It just happened that Lewis went by first and they pitted. That was going to happen. They were going to do the opposite to one another. But, I mean, had perhaps Mercedes reacted sooner, who knows, you know, or they pitted him under that virtual safety car. I mean, there's so many what ifs. You know, what if they did this? What if that happened? When did that happen? I mean, it's all hindsight is 20/20. But, you know, it's funny, and maybe that's part of the reason that that Lewis decided to intervene and drop, insist Mercedes drop that appeal, that he doesn't want to be the undisputed GOAT and winning that eighth chip, via the courts, right? And maybe he's just like, you know, whatever, I've still got 7. I still have the opportunity. I've still got a couple years left in front of me. Maybe I can still do it. And maybe when it comes to a legacy point of view, people look at Max and saying, well, there's an asterisk next to Max Verstappen's name. And regardless if Max goes on to never win another championship or he goes and wins 10, people always say, well, he shouldn't won in 21 because that was justly and rightly Lewis's championship and he should have won that one. But that race happened, that thing happened, right?
Under that safety car, I would argue that Red Bull did absolutely the right thing by pitting.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that Mercedes did absolutely the right thing by not giving up track position because in that moment, the expectation is, well, this race is going to finish under a caution. If we pit, we forfeit the lead for no reason.
They
didn't pit because the precedence is that it's not going to finish under, or it's not going to finish under a green flag. So I think both teams did the right thing. Just actually, you know, while we're speaking, one of our listeners is messaging us on Twitter right now, Juan Solo, just a couple of great points that reinforce some of the things that we're talking about. He's saying just a couple of thoughts. He's like, the FIA somehow made FIFA look good by comparison. Number two.
That's saying something.
Yes, absolutely. Number two, everybody assumes Mercedes and the FIA have made some sort of deal. If so, and that's what we were just talking about a couple of minutes ago, we need to know what it is. Any lack of transparency would just throw doubt into future results as well. And three, the deal better include enacting every recommendation from the Hamilton Commission. Number four, the race director has too many responsibilities, which we've talked about ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. And then number five, the rules are the rules. And then number six, F1 owes their fans a detailed, thorough, easily understood explanation. So it's funny because he says all of these things, and these are largely points that we've been making throughout this podcast, that we're owed a detailed response. You can't criticize us for creating a negative situation based on our misunderstanding of the rules if you can't provide us a clear understanding of what those rules are and how they were interpreted by the FIA on race day itself.
Yeah, it's kind of like watching my kids play games and how the rules constantly evolve and they end up freaking out halfway through, and then you see the board and the little tokens and the little pieces go flying across because somebody made up a rule halfway through. Yeah. No, you don't. Anyway, so let's take another break. We'll be back in just a moment, so don't go away. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. We're still breaking down the mayhem and the chaos and everything that's unfolded since last weekend's Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And one of the things that that's come out, that team principals will not be able to get onto the horn next year and bug the race director, which I think is the right thing to do. I'm not sure why this was something that was able to happen, but it's obviously something that should be dealt with, because I know that it wasn't that they were, in some cases, I guess they were basically pestering and lobbying Michael Massey to actually bring something up to the stewards, and whereas I guess it's up to the stewards to decide on their own whether or not something needs to be investigated. But, you know, why? You know, it's just this whole lobbying and whining and stuff like that. I mean, it was interesting to listen to, like on the race radio, some of the stuff that they would actually release and put out onto the TV feed. But most of the time when I heard these things, especially when they became more of a thing in the last, say, quarter or third of the season, I was always astounded. It's just like, well, number one, this is amazing that they're actually airing this for public consumption. But number two, I'm amazed that these people actually have a direct line into the race director as it is. I mean, this seems a bit bizarre to me, but I'm glad that this loophole is closed for 22.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we talked about this on Sunday, that ultimately it's the stewards that are making a lot of the decisions that the team principals are expressing their disbelief or anger or frustration about. And ultimately, Michael Massey serves no role other than to be a messenger between the two parties. And the stewards aren't about to change their decision-making, or shouldn't be changing their decision-making based on the input and feedback and noise created by the team principals. Yep. Now, of course, Sunday was a bit of an exception because Michael Massey controls the safety car deployment and bringing the safety car back in and lapping or unlapping the cars. But you're absolutely right. As much as it was enthralling from a public consumption perspective, it seemed wholly inappropriate. And says Ross Brawn here, we will stop this contact next year. It's unacceptable that team bosses put Michael under such pressure during the race. It's like the coaches negotiating with the referee in football. And I completely agree. But once again, you know what? The FIA, Formula One, created this situation, continues Ross Brawn. Toto can't demand that there shouldn't be a safety car, and Christian can't demand the cars have to unlap. Yeah. That's at the discretion of the race director. Yes, so I'm glad that they're going to be cutting off this line of communication.
Yeah. Next one is that tonight, earlier tonight, they had the FIA prize-giving gala in Paris. That's where Max wore a tuxedo, got the big trophy, and they were all smiles. Toto and Lewis did not attend, basically snubbing and protesting, saying that they were going to attend. And, you know, some people can say that's not sportsmanlike and stuff like that. But in this case, I totally understand it. And I don't feel any, you know, ill feeling towards either of them for not, you know, wanting to go. I mean, if it was maybe any other circumstance, I'd say, yeah, that's maybe a little bit offside. But given the circumstances, I think this is understandable.
I have something a little special for you tonight.
Okay.
On this topic. But before I get there, this was brought to my attention tonight. Yeah, a little bit of a tease. And actually, you know what? I don't know if we want to take we won't take a break.
We just did one like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, I was just good. I was playing that out in my head, but in the background on my TV, I have Selling Sunset on, so I was distracted for a second there. But in the sporting regulations, section 6x6.6, the drivers finishing 1, 2, or 3rd in the championship must be present at the FIA prize giving ceremony. So technically, as per the sporting regulations, Lewis had to be there. Now, all of that said, I don't think the FIA dare explore any kind of disciplinary action for this. Now, okay, so I'm going to read this to you, and I'm going to be totally honest. I did not know this happened, and if I was watching, I don't know that I would have been picked up on it right away.
Okay,
but a friend of the show messaged me earlier tonight saying, you need to check this out, and this person sent me a YouTube clip with the exact time code. Now, this individual was informed of this by a friend of theirs who's also a friend of the show. So friends of friends and friends of the show. So thank you to everybody. You will remain nameless. So during the prize giving ceremony tonight, Nick DeVries, Mercedes test driver, he is the current reigning Formula E champion, unfortunately didn't get an F1 ride for 2022, was invited on stage to accept his Formula E World Championship trophy.
Okay.
One of the hosts on the stage had asked him a question, and the question was, talk to us about winning the championship. Nick DeVries, and I'm going to read this because I wrote this entire thing out because I want to read it to you. Nick DeVries says, before talking about our season, I'd like to dedicate a couple of words to Jean Todt. And he says this while beaming, like just beaming, grinning ear to ear under the cameras on the stage in front of a packed house.
Okay.
Before talking about our season, I'd like to dedicate a couple of words to Jean Todt, who has been our president over the past 12 years. Jean, you might not remember, but 10 years ago, we actually met here in Paris. I felt intimidated. I felt scared. You asked me a math question, which I wasn't able to reply. Okay. You also told me I would never take a driver like that. I felt bad. I chose to work hard, and luckily I found a great team in Mercedes that welcomed me despite my lack of math skills, and I'm here tonight representing a great brand, and thank you very much for that, in brackets, Jean Todt. So, my interpretation of this is very, very specific, but I'd like your interpretation. Knowing the circumstances, knowing that Jean Todt is the president of the FIA, knowing that Nick DeVries is at the prize-giving ceremony, but of course Toto's not, Lewis is not, how do you read what I just said?
I think it's a little bit of a poke at Jean Todt that he's on the way out because he served the max 12 years as president of the FIA, and Nick being a champion now in world champion in Formula E for Mercedes, you know, justly winning that title, and basically I think he's kind of you know, flipping him the bird, saying, well, you know, here I am driving for a great manufacturer, Mercedes, being a world champion, and it was because of what you said to me and the way that you made me feel actually motivated me to get where I am today. And your put down was actually, you know, got me to where I am. So I think I'm so happy.
I am so happy that, and again, it's all about being human, et cetera, yeah. et cetera. I think Jean Todt's a very strong, capable human being, but this story I thought was fantastic. And your interpretation is exactly what I was hoping that you were going to read into this. I'm going to send you the link because I want you to see it live. But okay. I think just within the context of everything that's going on right now, I thought this was a little bit, I don't know if delicious is the right word. So to our valued listeners that sent this to us, thank you very, very much. And
it's juicy, isn't it?
Yeah, and to Lily Herman, who is obviously the publisher of the Engine Failure newsletter, who I strongly recommend everybody reach out to and subscribe to. I'm hoping for at least a 700-word breakdown of your interpretation of this speech. That would be much, much, much appreciated. But yeah, I thought it was very interesting. And I think if I was watching casually in the background, I maybe wouldn't have picked up on it. But to me, it was very much, like you said, one of those moments that, hey, look, you know what? Because of what you said, I worked harder and harder. And I found a great team that accepted me and loved me and embraced me, even though I wasn't great at math. And now look at me, I'm a world champion standing here on stage representing the Mercedes brand.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I just want to give a couple of shout outs to Rocky and Pratik Bharadwaj in the live chat. Lots of good conversation going on over on YouTube. So thanks for joining in, guys. Now, next one. This is interesting. And if I was Max, I think I would have walked back on this one, but this isn't really a surprise. He said several weeks ago that if he won the championship this year, he would rock the number one next year and kind of revive that that tradition in Formula One, because the world champion always had number one on their car. So Max said that he's actually going to do that. However, I think this is a little bit tone deaf. I think just the way that everything went down, I know that he said that he was going to do it. But if I was him, I would have walked back on this one. I would have just stuck with my own personal number and just kept the 33 on there for next year. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that wasn't the angle that I thought you were going to take on this one.
Oh, really?
And maybe... Yeah, and maybe, and I think you probably know this but even better than I do, and I think we've all forgotten that this is even a thing in Formula One, yeah. simply because Lewis has chosen not to do it. Nico retired immediately after 2016, so he never had the opportunity to wear number one. But maybe just for the context of our listeners, share what this means and what the history is behind doing this.
Well, I mean, what the drivers have now, and this has been a thing for a good many years now, is they have their own personal number. So it's very much, you know, like in football or baseball, all the players have their own numbers. I mean, we all know what number Kobe wore. We all know what number Tom Brady wears, etc. We all know who CR7 is if you're a soccer fan. So anyways, that's something that Formula One decided to do, was let the drivers have their own personal number, because each and every year it was difficult getting to know all these. It took me like literally 2/3 of the year to remember which driver had which number, because it wasn't necessarily the same each and every year. But the one thing you could count on was the world champion always had number one. And then Ferrari always had 27 and 28. Paying homage to Gilles Villeneuve, who was killed at Zolder in practice for the Belgian Grand Prix way back in 1982. Enzo Ferrari loved Gilles. He was an amazing race driver, and he made a huge impact with Ferrari. I mean, that's a terrible choice of word, but anyway, so the world champion would always keep one. Ferrari was always have 27, 28. So that has been gone by the wayside. I like the idea, like I say, that each driver has their own personal number. But I really wanted to see a return to that, having the world champion having number one on the nose of the car, having number one on the side pods, wherever it is. And so I'm kind of glad that Max brought it back. But however, just based on what happened, I think I would have, if it was me personally, I think I would have let this one slide for another year. But in future, I would like to see it come back, because it had meaning, it had significance, that if you had the number one on your car, you had it for a reason. And it wasn't just because, hey, you know, I like the number 44 if you're Lewis, or 33 if you're Max, or whatever. I mean, that's cool. Especially when you see how these guys use the numbers into their sort of own personal brand and stuff like that. But number one was always special, and it meant something. It was significant because you were the best the previous year. You're defending that championship this year. And you know what? Maybe it kind of puts a target on your back that, you know, you got that big one on your car and everybody's coming for you. But I thought it was always a cool tradition.
I hear you on the tone deaf piece. I think I would probably agree with you more if he'd won the championship through a DNF, if there had been contact, if he'd basically been gifted the championship through some other means. I mean, ultimately, you could argue that he was gifted the championship based on the interpretation of the rules and the calls by Michael Massey on Sunday. But again, he did nothing wrong in that championship. They just executed based on the circumstances that were presented to them. I don't think he should choose not to wear number one as a byproduct of that. I think in doing so, especially since he'd stated earlier in the season that he was going to do this, it would suggest that maybe the image is tarnished and we're going to kind of back away from it and not celebrate it as sure. if we aren't really the world champion. So I hear you. I think had he won a championship because of contact with Hamilton and Hamilton DNF'd, and he won by default because he had more race wins, whatever the case is, sure, that's dirty. But as much as none of us are satisfied with the outcome of the race, I would still argue that Red Bull did nothing wrong that weekend, and they executed based on the circumstances as they were available to them. And kudos to Max, and I agree, this is something that I'd like to see. The other thing I'll just add quickly, and I know we've got a ton of other great stories, but the one thing that I would love to see, and we see this in the NBA now, is players wear a gold tag on the back of their jersey if their team has won a championship and there's a number on it. So for instance, the Toronto Raptors have a gold badge that says number one on the back of their jerseys. I'd love to see something like that in Formula One, where if the team that you're driving for or the team that you represent has won championships, that should be called out. There should be some sort of unique identifier on the cars themselves that recognizes that, hey, that team has won a championship. And if there's been more than one, there should be a way to signify that. I think that would be very, very cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. Hey, before we get to another break here, just one interesting thing. There's an auction that's going on this weekend in Paris. A couple of notable cars that are going on the block is Fernando Alonso's 2004 Renault R24. And before that is Max Verstappen's work car, which is a Honda Civic Type R. And Max's car is starting with a bid of €33,333. And all the proceeds will be going to the Wings for Life charity, which was co-founded by Red Bull co-founder Dietrich Mateschitz. So there you go. That's kind of a cool one. Anyways, time for another break. We're going to have to start getting through this stuff here. Like, I think we're only halfway through the topics we wanted to, 60 minutes into this thing. Anyways, time for a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment, so don't go away. Okay, welcome back. So one good thing did happen to Lewis this week. He was at Windsor Castle earlier this week and was officially knighted on Wednesday. He was awarded the knighthood earlier this year in the Queen's New Year's Honours at the end of last year, making him Sir Lewis Hamilton. But he was not formally knighted until Wednesday of this week by Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales. And that is actually very, very cool. So there's some pictures that you can see online with Lewis and, down on one knee, and Prince Charles with the ceremonial sword, and probably say, "Arise, Sir Lewis." I think that's kind of a very, very cool picture. So congratulations to Lewis on that. And where should we go now? Okay.
Engines, for sure.
So long talked about, long rumored about, but Formula One has finally agreed to ditch the MGUH as part of the new engine rules. And this will be dropped from all the power units starting in 26. This is something that we've been speculating and talking about for a good number of weeks, if not months, on this show. And this is a very, very complex piece of technology. And this was basically the whole drive behind this discussion was that the current teams were willing to let this one go, being it's such a difficult piece of technology to master, to make it a little bit more attractive to a new entry into the sport, which has been heavily rumored and speculated that it's going to be Audi or Porsche or something from under the VW banner, them, Volkswagen being the parent company. But it would make it more feasible and less challenging and expensive for a new entrant to design and build a new engine without that MGUH in it. Mark, what's your take on this? Good news, bad news, or meh?
I think, well, I don't think it's meh. I think it's very, very, very important, but I think it was something that we all understood was going to happen. And I think even, to be totally honest, I think even if Formula One wasn't on the cusp of recruiting and signing on a new engine supplier or new OEM, we don't necessarily know what Volkswagen's role is going to be within the sport if they do join, but I think there was a very high probability that the MGUH was going to disappear. And just as a recap for listeners at home, and I'll make this very quickly, please don't roll your eyes, but the hybrid powertrain that Formula One cars use today is incredibly complex. And really, there's two separate, I shouldn't say competing, but there's two separate complementary electrification systems or hybrid systems at play within the system. One, you have the MGUK, and the MGUK effectively captures kinetic energy from the braking system. So when brakes are applied, they create a tremendous amount of heat, especially in a Formula One car. Formula One cars have a system called the MGUK, captures that energy, puts it into a battery store. The other system is an MGUH. And unlike the MGUK, which has practical real world uses in road cars, the MGUH is incredibly complex. And I'm quoting here from flowracers.com, the MGUH uses waste heat energy, technically kinetic energy, from the exhaust gases to spin the compressor of the turbocharger and eliminate turbo lag. So it's an incredibly complex piece of technology that has a very specific use in internal combustion engines. And ultimately, MGUK systems can have an application in any type of motor car. The MGUH is specific to internal combustion engines that have a turbocharger. So the fear has always been that, one, it's very expensive, and any new entry to Formula One that is developing a new power unit from the ground up, it will take them years to get to the level of MGUH sophistication that any other team has. And that would be a hindrance or a barrier to entry for a new team joining the sport. So by ditching it, the hope is that the Volkswagen Group is going to sign on. And in 2026, when we get the new power unit formula, which is probably going to be pretty similar to this one, minus this component, it'll still probably be a 1.6 liter V6, but the MGUK components will be beefed up considerably. This is good news. And I think we're all sitting on a razor's edge waiting for news about when or if Volkswagen's going to join. And when they do announce that, what is the capacity with which they join the sport? Do they buy a team? Do they simply provide power units to an existing team? We don't know, but that's going to be something really exciting to talk about throughout the offseason.
Wasn't that meeting that they were going to have with their board, wasn't it supposed to be about this time of the month? Wasn't it sort of like early to mid December? Nothing's leaked out yet, which I find fascinating. So who knows if there will be news on that anytime soon. Now, some other news is Charles Leclerc has tested positive for COVID-19 for the second time in 2021. He had contracted the virus back in January of this year after coming into close contact with somebody who was sick with COVID. Anyways, he is apparently fine and is self-isolating at home with some mild symptoms. So that's a bit of a surprise, but you know, expect the unexpected when it comes to COVID. Now, sticking with Ferrari, this one I like. This is a rumor I like. Carlos Sainz apparently could be up for an extension with Ferrari. Okay, maybe we weren't talking a lot about Carlos Sainz this year, but I think quietly, I think he had a very good season for the Scuderia. I think that obviously they weren't going to be in a position to be challenging for races and for wins and everything, but I think he did a very, very solid job for a team that is obviously faced with a ton of scrutiny and a lot of pressure to be a Ferrari driver. And I think that they have a very solid pairing in Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc. And I think giving Carlos a new deal or extending his current deal would be a win-win situation for both him and for the team.
Yeah, completely agree. I don't have a lot to add on this other than the fact that I think we've all really enjoyed watching the Carlos Sainz journey. I still feel awful not knowing that he'd scored a podium until he literally stepped onto the podium in Abu Dhabi. And I am strongly of the mind that he will be competing for not podiums, but for race wins alongside Charles Leclerc. And I think obviously the dynamic between the two of them has been positive this year. Yep. And I think it's because the team hasn't faced a ton of scrutiny because they weren't necessarily expected to be as competitive as they were. But I think as the team continues to improve and we see some competitive parity next year, expect to see a little bit of friction because I think the two of them have pushed each other in a really healthy way this year, as Tim Haraney described on a recent Spaces chat. But I would expect next year that the two are going to push each other in more uncomfortable ways because they will be competing for the top step on podiums.
Yeah, very cool. It'd be good to see where they are next year and see if they've sorted things out and what they get, what they design, what they build for 2022. Now, one small piece of Ferrari news, they've renewed a multi-year deal with longtime sponsor Kaspersky. I always get that wrong, but anyways, they will also feature not only on the cars, but also on the driver's overalls, helmets. And they're going to be an official partner of their FDA esports team, which is kind of cool. Now, we do have some test news. We've seen a lot of young drivers in the cars in Abu Dhabi for the postseason test. Did you want to talk about this one, Mark?
Yeah, I think it's probably worth taking a quick stab at this one. Obviously, throughout the course of a 12-month calendar, we have some testing sessions. In the past, there were far more. There were up to 2 weeks of testing sessions during the winter. You would have a week following the season. Some years, you would even have in-season testing sessions as well. But in the spirit of the cost cap and creating more competitive parity and reducing the cost pressures on the teams, we've seen fewer and fewer and fewer testing sessions. And now, this last year, we were down to 3 days of winter testing, which I think probably wasn't enough. And I think that was the feedback that the teams gave to Formula One, was we need more time to shake down our cars. This year, especially as they're going to be rolling out entirely new chassis and aero, I think they're probably going to need at least a week. 3 days certainly won't be enough. 4 or 5 probably still won't cut it. But what we saw this year, and we typically get a couple of days of testing after the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix because all of the teams and their infrastructure are at a dedicated circuit, is we get to see a couple of days of testing. And oftentimes what they're testing is the compounds that Pirelli would be using the subsequent year. So oftentimes we'll see Pirelli introduce new compounds because they're constantly evolving the tires to keep up with the cars, because the cars continue to evolve. This testing session was a little bit unique. So every team had the opportunity to run a young driver, and most teams chose to do so on the Tuesday. So you got to see a ton of talented young drivers, and we'll speak to a couple of those in a couple of minutes, that got to step into a Formula One car, many of them for the first time. So they were basically rocking the 2021 cars with the existing 13-inch wheels. One of the young drivers rocked a 2021 car with 13-inch wheels on the Wednesday. But what we also saw on the Wednesday was a number of our existing drivers, or a number of existing drivers, getting into Formula One mule cars, rocking the 18-inch wheels. So obviously the teams and Pirelli are desperate to start getting some data on how these 18-inch wheels, how these 18-inch wheels perform in a real-world setting. And it isn't the first time that most of these teams have had the 18-inch wheels on their cars, but it's certainly the first time they've had the 18-inch wheels on their car with a more evolved version of the tire compounds that Pirelli are going to be bringing next year. So we got to see a couple of young drivers, which I'll let you speak to, but ultimately the sessions were largely a success. I think one of the young drivers for Red Bull unfortunately hit a wall, but obviously anytime we start to see some young drivers in the cars, it's exciting. And we got to see not only the Formula 2 champion stepping into a Formula 1 car, but we got to see some IndyCar drivers step into a Formula 1 cockpit.
Well, we saw Nick De Vries, we saw Pato O'Ward, we saw Oscar Piastri. I mean, we saw so many guys out there. Robert Schwartzman set some very impressive times for Haas. And I think, you know, it's exciting to see Pato O'Ward. I mean, there's that connection in there. And he's actually kind of setting himself a goal, or the aim, to break into Formula 1 in the next 2 years. So I can imagine he's going to be working the connections that he has with fellow Mexican, you know, Sergio Perez, and, you know, or just any connection that he has. But he said that his F1 test with McLaren was crazy and insane times 10. And I can totally see it. I mean, you see any pictures of Pato from that test, he's just all smiles and obviously very, very pumped about it. So he says he believes he has a maximum of 2 years to make it into Formula One, and he's going to do everything that he can do to make it happen after that first McLaren test. He told motorsport.com in an interview, quote, "To be fairly honest, arguably there's a maximum 2 more years for me to be able to come into the F1 scene. There's not much more more time. I will do everything I can to make it happen because it is the top of the top and my dream and my life right now. It all started with one dream, and that dream was to make it to Formula One. The dream ambled out to a different series, endurance racing and IndyCar racing, but it all started with that one dream, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't want it because I do. I'm going to do absolutely everything I can, and I'm going to push my absolute maximum to be sure that I leave nothing on the table. Because you've got to take it, you've got to try, because if I don't, I will regret it for the rest of my life, end quote. So there you go. Listening to him and seeing what he did at testing this week, I can't help but feeling, you know, I got to cheer for this guy. his enthusiasm is infectious.
I completely agree. I think all of this just reinforces how badly we need a couple of other seats in Formula One. 10 teams, I know, 20 right? seats. It's so tight, and it just feels that between the Formula 2 pipeline and IndyCar itself, there's so many talented drivers that I shouldn't say deserve, because that's not really up to me to decide, but there's so many talented young drivers that seem capable of piloting a Formula One car. And some of these young drivers have fantastic personalities, fantastic energy, and they would be an absolute coup for Formula One from a marketing perspective. And I think what I'm really excited to see is eventually we're going to have an Indy breakthrough. So obviously we see a lot of Formula One drivers go the way of Indy, especially after their, I would say, Formula One career expires. But I think at some point we're going to see the talent reverse, and we're going to see a couple of drivers break through. And McLaren has absolutely led the, I would say, the financial investment train into Indy. And of course, they're going to have their team next year. They've been partnering. They're going to have their own dedicated team in IndyCar next year. But they are absolutely cultivating terrific young talent there, which I think is fantastic. But I think we're going to see a breakthrough in a direction that maybe we wouldn't expect. And of course, we've seen it before. If you go back to Jacques Villeneuve, wins the Indy 500, makes the transition to Formula One in 96, wins the title in 97. But I think we're on a course to see more and more of that, especially given the fact that Indy's become increasingly stabilized after that really, really contentious, difficult period in the mid-90s and the 2000s when Indy split into two competing series. And of course, it's fully reunified now and has been for 12 years, but I think it's really starting to get onto strong financial footing.
Cool. I don't have much more to add, but I think I got a nice email here to wrap it all up. So I'm going to read it to you. Hi there, Mark and Mark, two Gen DTSers here that love what you guys do week in and week out. Tonight, we are filled with an explosion of emotions with that unexpected finale. You have both mentioned on several episodes that the inconsistencies and or moments of influence on behalf of the FIA could be a turnoff for new fans, but we hadn't really connected with that sentiment until the last two races of this season. What advice or feelings would you share to those of us feeling very lucky to have witnessed a truly remarkable season, but at the same time left feeling with some disillusionment about the lack of consistency and clarity when it comes to officiating? P.S. After each race, my girlfriend and I both turn to each other and say, "Can't wait to hear what they say on the podcast." Thank you so much for all you both do, and especially for your respective openness to support and discuss mental health. Parker and Danielle from Bend, Oregon. So great email. Glad to hear a check in from the Beaver State. Awesome email. So what do you say? What advice do we give to them? I don't know.
Well, first of all, I'm going to buy you a little bit of time.
Okay, thank
to compose
you.
Compose yourself and articulate in your head a response.
So yeah, I don't know if I can do that
you,
right now.
Parker Daniel, thank you so much for all the support. Your incredibly kind words mean so much to all of us. And sometimes I have to pinch myself thinking that there's people, literally people, like human beings out there that go to their podcast feed and refresh it to see if a new episode's dropped. So that to me is still a little bit surreal. I think for me, I'm all about looking at the positive and the upside. And I think, like I said earlier, I think this is a watershed moment, and it's an inflection point for Formula One mm-hmm. and for the FIA. And I think we've spoken so much about how there is so much low-hanging fruit and so many obvious things that you can do. And some of those are the fact that, hey, look, we rely on volunteer unpaid marshals. Why is that? Why can't we recruit and pay and compensate people to do that role? That's a very, very challenging role. And likewise, we go into every Grand Prix weekend with multiple volunteer stewards. We're talking about the people that are officiating a multi-billion dollar sport, and maybe they're great, but the fact that they're different every Grand Prix weekend just kind of fuels this inconsistency, because even if they're great and they know motorsport and they have a motorsport background, they're different every single race weekend. Why don't we have 4, 8, or 12 dedicated, full-time, heavily compensated stewards that travel the world so we get some consistency to the approach when it comes to officiating? And why does Michael Massey have to do 118 jobs? Why does he have to manage safety in real time and competitive officiating in real time? Why can't he have two people that report to him, one that owns each of those buckets? There's so much low-hanging fruit, and I wouldn't have had any confidence that any of this would have been visited, but I think based on what the Formula One has experienced over the last week, especially from a PR perspective, I think their hand is going to be forced, and hopefully the sport is going to be better for it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what to really else other to say. I mean, how am I going to deal with it? Let's just say that there's probably going to be a pint of Cherry Garcia, you know, or something else from Ben & Jerry's, or something, you know, something from the freezer aisle, in the form of emotional eating. You know, it's just, I don't know what to say or to do at this time, because it's just, obviously, as we said off the top of the show, there's obviously a lot of anger there, which you can understand. And I mean, even the best of us that maybe weren't talking from, pulling for either one of them, like myself, even I feel really cheated and left down or let down by this finale to a super exciting and memorable season. And it's over now. And I know it just kind of leaves us all hanging, and I really don't know how to really deal with it properly other than, well, it's over with and it's done with. And let's hope whatever comes out of this clarity exercise, or whatever the hell they're calling it, is, that it doesn't provide us with more questions and more suspicions, and that it's resolved properly. I guess that's the only thing I can say. And, well, but on the flip side is, as sad as I am in a way that the season's over, I'm also incredibly relieved, because as intense as and enjoyable as it was, and the fact that it looked like in the summer anyways that this battle that had been going on up until the summer break looked like it was going to continue all the way through the season, and the stakes just got ratcheted up each and every week, I'm kind of glad that intensity's over for now, because it was just becoming emotionally a little bit too much to kind of deal with almost week in, week out. And it just sort of seemed inevitable that every little thing that happened, every perceived or actual incident between these two guys would just, it was like a powder keg waiting to explode. So
I completely, anyways. And I know we got to go here. We've been rambling on for 2 hours, but
Seems like it.
I very much agree that this season had some incredibly exciting moments. It went down to the absolute wire, which is typically, I think, what we would all wish and hope and pray for at the onset of a new campaign. But I was relieved. I was so relieved when this championship was over. And now I look to next year, and we're going to have 23 races over an even more compressed calendar. We all know that Formula One wants to get to 25 races. I worry about how much energy we'll all expend, especially if it's close. But
yeah,
this championship had exciting moments, frustrating moments, infuriating moments like last weekend. But ultimately, I'm relieved it's over. But it's not really over, because the frustration and the questions and the anger from last weekend haven't rescinded. What's a word that means going away?
Going away? How about leaving?
All those angry feelings have not gone away, and I'm still as frustrated as I was on Sunday.
Dissipate.
Dissipated. They have not dissipated. I'm gonna turn off my microphone now so you can turn off the lights and,
and send everyone
this episode to bed.
It's funny too, just as we read that lovely email from Parker and Danielle, Rocky in the live chat also in Bend, Oregon. So there seems to be a bit of a community.
Whoa.
There. And then he says, ask what a Cincinnati FC fan does. I don't know if I should ask, but I'm kind of wondering, sounds like we got a soccer fan here. And being from Oregon, I'm wondering if he's a Timbers fan because, you know, got the whole Cascadia thing going on with Whitecaps and Seattle and Portland. But anyways, very, very cool that it's a small world. I think that's awesome. Anyways, I'm starting to lose my voice. I need to get something to drink. So I think this is the perfect place to wrap it up. Guys, thank you so much for your support all season long. Thank you for being there right from the very beginning or from the very last week. If you've only joined in and found this podcast, we appreciate you guys all being in there for however long you've been here. Anyways, that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching on YouTube. If you want to get in touch, send us a tweet at ScuderiaF1Pod. Send us an email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. Promise I'm going to answer some of these ones very, very soon. Now that I got all my free time back, it's wonderful. Anyways, have a great week, and we'll be back very, very soon. Bye for now.